Good morning and welcome to Focus on Health, the weekly radio program where we talk about all the great things happening at Van Deese Medical Center. I am your host, Lori Foster, and joining us for today's program, we have infection preventionist and employee health nurse, Carla Johnson, talking about tips for the winter season, tips that can keep us all healthy and safe. Before we do, I have just a couple of announcements I'd like to share. We have a variety of orthopedic services now available at Van Deese Medical Center. We have partnered with Iowa Ortho out of Des Moines and have Dr. Benjamin Wilkie, orthopedic hip and knee surgeon, Dr. Scott Shumway, hand and upper extremity specialist, Dr. Brett Rosenthal, orthopedic spine specialist, and physician assistant Craig Holtorf, orthopedic specialist, joining us in our specialty clinic department. Some of the services they can provide include total hip and knee replacements, which we are doing here at our hospital, including the direct anterior approach for hip replacements, fracture care, fracture surgery, sports injuries, work injuries, treatment of the hand, wrist, elbow, hand and wrist surgery, carpal tunnel surgery, treatment of disorders of the spine, spine injuries, including sciatica, bulging discs, and those general orthopedic conditions. Very excited to be bringing top orthopedic care here to our hospital. If you have questions or would like to make an appointment, you can call 515-832-7746. And I also want to mention, we have a new online patient scheduling system that is available. So you can now schedule your clinic appointments with the provider of your choice or your mammograms at the time that fits your schedule. It's very easy. You can go to the homepage of our website at vandeestmc.org, and at the very top, there is a schedule online button. You can click on that. There are several filters you can include if you want to choose by provider, choose by specialty, choose by a condition. It's, again, very quick and easy. I encourage you to give it a try, and you can pick the appointment time that works best with your schedule. Again, go online to vandeestmc.org to schedule your next clinic appointment or mammogram today. And with that, I think we're going to start into our program. As we all know, Old Man Winter has blanketed us and the entire country with frigid temperatures recently, so it feels like winter. We are at the peak of winter now, seeing heightened virus activity, getting through these cold temperatures, and we have Carla Johnson, infection preventionist and employee health nurse at Van Deese Medical Center, joining us to share tips on how we can stay healthy and safe during the winter season. Good morning to you, Carla.
Well, good morning, Lori. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, I tell you what, this, you know, Mother Nature, she just has a way of keeping us on our toes, doesn't she?
Absolutely.
And I tell you what, this weather, it is just bloody cold last week, and I know now this week is just giving us a nice warm, balmy in the 40s. And I tell you what, I don't know whether to get my swimsuit on or in my shorts or to get out all the wool that I possibly can. So I tell you what, it's just you never know. So one of the things, and I think that one of the big takeaway from our discussion today is, no matter whether you have cold nonstop or you get it in these little outbreaks here and there, we want you to be just as prepared as possible. And I know the Farmer's Almanac, way back in the day, they had a thing about predicting all the crazy weather in the past. And I know that it's really tried and it's actually been pretty accurate in the past. But that we could talk about that all day. But one of the things that the weather can do is it can mess up our power. It can take your lights out, your heat out. It can definitely cause some issues with the carbon monoxide and the poisoning. It can cause hypothermia, frostbite, you name it. It can cause it in a lot of people. That's when you take those trips into the emergency room. One of the biggest things, Lori, that I hear a lot about is whether it's super, super cold or not, one of the things that really need to be focused on for safety in the winter, it's just really important to recognize the hidden dangers of carbon monoxide poisoning. During the colder months, the use of generators, fuel-powered space heaters, and other heating devices, it just increases the risk of the carbon monoxide poisoning. One of the big reasons why is it's odorless, it's colorless gas, and it can just be downright deadly. And I didn't realize this, but it causes hundreds of deaths each year and causes hundreds of illnesses in thousands of and more. A lot of ER visits are associated with that. Carbon monoxide, it's just produced by household items like the portable generators, charcoal grills, and gas or oil burning furnaces. Everyone's at risk, but infants and the elderly, and individuals with heart disease, anemia, or breathing problems, those are especially vulnerable. Carbon monoxide poisoning symptoms are often described like as a flu-like, and they can include any of the following, like a headache, dizziness, weakness, upset stomach, vomiting, chest pain, and confusion. So a lot of times people think that they're coming down with like the GI crud. And then if you breathe in high levels of carbon monoxide, you could pass out or die. And then if you're not found, it could be actually really catastrophic. So people who are asleep or under the influence of alcohol or drugs may not notice the symptoms in time, and you could die from this. So to keep your home safe, follow these simple tips. Install a battery-operated or battery backup carbon monoxide detector near every sleeping area. Not just one here or there, but near every sleeping area. Always use generators outdoors, at least 20 feet from any window, doors, and attached garages, including those of neighbors. Avoid using gas stoves or ovens to heat your home. I've heard a lot of people doing that in the past and it didn't turn out very good, I guarantee you. Have your heating system, water heater, and any other gas, oil, or coal-burning appliances serviced by a qualified technician each year. This is where I would encourage people, don't try to save a little money by doing it yourself. Get somebody that's qualified. They know what they're doing. And even though you might feel you do too, the qualified technician, they really know their stuff and just wouldn't want anybody to get hurt in the process. Never run your car or truck inside a garage that's attached to your house, even with the garage door open. And if you follow all those steps, you can help keep yourself and your loved ones protected this winter. So those are some really good steps. So, and there again, whether it's cold or not cold, that's one of the biggest things that we really worry about.
Great information, Carla.
Another thing that I hear a lot about is frostbite. It's another serious condition that occurs when the skin and underlying tissues just freezes due to prolonged exposure to extremely cold temperatures. And some people, they have different ideas of cold temperatures. My idea of cold temperature might be something different that my grandmother thinks is cold. So to prevent frostbite, it's essential to know who's at risk. You need to recognize the signs and take action if it develops. So you are more likely to develop frostbite if you have poor blood circulation. So my grandmother, she's older, and we know that she has poor blood circulation. She's all poor thing. She's always complaining of just always being cold. So, and then she's always trying to bundle up and she's still cold. So you need to make sure you get dressed properly for extremely cold temperatures. And one of the things you need to look for is early signs of frostbite, and that could include redness or pain in any exposed skin area. And it doesn't always have to be exposed skin. It might just be skin that might not have enough coverage or enough, maybe doesn't have very thick gloves on, or maybe you don't have a very thick scarf on. Those things can actually be frostbite prone. If you see any white or grayish yellow skin, that's also danger. Or skin that feels firm or waxy, or if you feel any numbness, those are some of the classic signs of frostbite. So if you notice any of those, get out of the cold and protect that exposed skin immediately. Severe frostbite can lead to permanent damage, and in extreme cases, it could require the affected body part to be removed. So we don't want anything bad to happen to you. So get inside, seek shelter, get that area warmed up. You want to avoid rubbing that area too much, though. Just try to get it warm and just get it under some warm blankets, and then seek medical attention as soon as possible. And then you get to that ER, and then they'll take care of you from there.
Great information. Carly, you mentioned your grandmother being cold. Are there others that are more at risk for hypothermia?
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Lori, because actually there is. Even babies sleeping in cold rooms. I mean, if you're one of those that has a cold or an old house. My daughter, she lives up in northern Iowa, and she has an old house. And they have heaters in their room, but some of the rooms don't. And if they didn't have that heater in there, that room would be very cold. So if you got a really cold room, you'd really need to watch that babe. And older adults that are lacking food, clothing, or heating, those folks are going to be at risk. Or people who stay outdoors for long periods, such as those experiencing homelessness, hikers or hunters, people who drink alcohol or use illicit drugs, and people with limited mobility who may struggle to stay warm or seek shelter. So there's quite a few people there. And then we can't forget our little fur babies at home too. Some are long-haired, some are short-haired, but those paws of theirs, they can only handle that cold ground for a certain amount of time. So think of them and try to get them in the house as soon as you can, or make sure that they have some good straw or something to keep their feet up off of that cold ground.
Thank you, Carla. Also, like I mentioned, we are at the peak of the winter season, so seeing heightened virus activity, what can you share with listeners? What are we seeing these days?
Well, right now we're seeing a moderate amount, low to moderate amount of influenza and COVID. We're seeing a lot more in the community of gastroenteritis. And hearing about norovirus. I'm seeing a lot of norovirus being tested here in the hospital. I'm hearing a lot of from friends and relatives of actual norovirus episodes and gastroenteritis. So there's just a lot, also hearing about the walking pneumonia, a lot of that is going around right now. So hearing more about all of that than the COVID and influenza. And I don't know if that's fortunate, unfortunate. Not really certain. There's just a lot of stuff going around. I received an interesting article from the provider in Omaha and Nebraska Family Medicine doctor, and he created an article. Actually, he said if you or a loved one has recently had nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, odds are it may have been caused by norovirus. And I think probably most of everybody out there knows what that is. It's a stomach bug, one of the leading causes of gastroenteritis worldwide. It's been rearing its ugly head in schools, daycares, and homes across the country. The virus is spread person to person and usually occurs via the fecal-oral route. And then he went on to say, people hear that and think, ew, I'm eating poop, Dr. Lukey says. But really, it's that people don't always wash their hands appropriately, is what he's saying. Maybe they're changing a diaper, or they come into contact with it on their clothes, or a towel in the bathroom, and then it gets ingested. So it's kind of like they're eating poop, but really it's just that somebody hasn't washed their hands well, and then they get it on that towel, and then it's just a vicious cycle, is what it is. So it can also get transmitted through airborne droplets when an ill person vomits, and through contaminated water, food, or other objects. And the bad thing is that alcohol foam and gel does not kill the virus. So skip that hand sanitizer altogether and just wash your hands thoroughly with soap and water. So, and then after contracting norovirus, within 24 to 40 hours, a person may begin experiencing one or more of the following symptoms. And hopefully, if you're lucky, you only have one. If you're unlucky, you're going to get all of them. Mm-hmm. So it's nausea, vomiting, watery diarrhea without blood, abdominal pain, body aches, fatigue, and about half the time people get fever. So, and then he says the only time you really need to seek treatment, he said, while most people will recover on their own, those that have a compromised immune system, or if you're a toddler under 1 year, are at risk for more severe infection. And then you should inform their, make sure you take them and get checked out. Generally, symptoms will be most severe in the first day or two of the illness. Sipping on water or a low sugar electrolyte drink will help prevent dehydration. And that's the main thing that you want to try to prevent, is that dehydration. Number one, you feel horrible anyway, but then when you get that dehydration going, that makes it even worse. And if you're able to rest and just stay hydrated, if you can get that nausea to subside, that helps. And usually within 24 to 48 hours, you should feel a lot better. But if the symptoms are so severe that you can't stay hydrated and you keep vomiting, you're going to need IV fluids. So if you think that you may have the norovirus and would like to be seen from home, you know, there are places you can get telehealth appointments, and you can get yourself checked out that way. And you can always see a provider and get to feeling better in no time. Then the other thing is, if you start feeling better and you really don't know what to eat or what you should drink, bland foods are the way to go. I can't repeat it enough. I had a friend who tried, their toddler wanted something to eat right after they vomited. They're like, Mommy, I want something to eat. And so the mom didn't know, it was a first time child. They gave him French fries and Coke. That's not a thing to do. Please don't do that to your child. Bland, just think bland. So bananas, rice, toast, applesauce, mashed potatoes, plain noodles, crackers, pretzels, even eggs with minimal added fat, dairy, or spices, like just even scramble an egg. Any low-fiber grain, like a plain rice, do a piece of toast, a white pasta, and drinks. Ice chips, that's even something that's been a standard of care for I don't know how many years, back in when I was a nurse back in the 80s, when I first was a new grad. Ice chips has remained the same. It worked just as good back then as it does today. And they're cheap. Don't have to go to the store to get them. And they work. Our little grandson, 2 and almost 3 years old, he was sick and he was at our house one day, and he also thought that it was pretty cool to be able to eat ice chips with a little spoon out of a cup. So he thought that was all right, and it worked. So for some people that get into some of the different teas or spices, peppermint tea and ginger, that's been known to reduce nausea. So there again, if you have that on hand, you can try that. Some broth-based soups. You know, they have all those electrolyte beverages in the store that can work good, or some of the sports drinks. Foods to avoid: high fat and fried foods, caffeinated beverages, high sugar foods, because that can worsen the diarrhea, especially in kids. Anything spicy, because that can trigger the nausea and vomiting in some people. Milk and milk products. When you get sick with a stomach flu, some people have trouble digesting the lactose and sugar in the milk and the milk products, and a lot of times that can last for up to a week. And don't go and stir the pot. Keep the alcohol out of the picture. And then the bottom line, when you have the stomach flu, keeping down foods and beverages can be difficult. So ice chips, clear liquids, and electrolyte beverages are good places to start. And they can help you replenish fluids and electrolytes in general. So until you can tolerate your usual diet, bland options like the soups and refined grains and plain potatoes are safer choices. They might not sound the best, but just know you're going to get back to normal. You'll get back to your normal diet and you're going to feel better later. So just stick with the ho-hum stuff for right now. You'll thank yourself. And then just allowing your body to rest and staying hydrated. And then just trying some foods on this list. It just might help you recover just a little bit more quickly so you can get back to the fun stuff. So if you can get back there a little bit more quickly, you'll thank yourself. So, and I just hope that all of you out there that you won't come down with any of this. I know our family was unfortunately scathed with this gastroenteritis at Christmas time, and it was not fun, but we got through it, and we all lived for another day. So I tell you what, we've never cleaned so much, so we all survived. So, and Lori, hopefully you don't have to go through any of that, and nobody else. Hopefully nobody else. So,
you know, and that's just a good reminder. You mentioned those bland foods. I can remember when my kids were little, like it was just the brat diet. That's what I would remember. And, you know, bananas, rice, applesauce, and toast. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a good one to go by. Unfortunately, we do see this at different times of the year, but especially kind of during these winter months when people are cooped up inside, germs get spread pretty easily. And unfortunately, those that experience this, what you do, maybe start to feel a little better. You're hungry. You want to just go for the food you like, but you just got to take it slow. Easy
slow
start with those.
Slow is key.
Yes. Yes, those bland foods. So good definitely. Tips, Carla. So, as we go to round out the show, I know that you had recently sent a communication about some new recommendations.
Yes, this communication just came out. The CDC issued some information effective January 16th. They sent out some recommendations regarding the pneumococcal vaccine. So it used to be that you could only receive it when you turned 65 years old, but now they have changed that to 50 years old. So, and the COVID-19 for adults 65 and older, they are encouraging a second dose of the 2024-25 COVID vaccine given 6 months apart. And then for people 6 months to 64 years old who are moderately to severely immunocompromised or severely immunocompromised, they recommend a second dose. And then you can even consider a third dose under shared decision-making with your healthcare providers. So this is all just hot off the press. So I actually just went and got my pneumococcal PCV20 just 2 weeks ago. So I was pretty excited to be able to get that. And actually I got my COVID, my next COVID too. So if you have grandparents, parents, anybody that is 65 and older, make sure or ask them if they've gotten their second dose, or ask them to call their doctor's office or the pharmacy and ask them. It is a recommendation that they get that second dose. So just want to let people know that so they can start those conversations at home around the dinner table. It's good to know.
It is good to know. Perfect. Carla, thank you for the good information.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
As always, yes, you provide good tips to our listeners out there, hopefully to keep them safe and healthy throughout the winter season. So thanks again for being on the show.
You bet.
And that will do it for today's edition of Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Diest Medical Center, where our focus is you.